So we'll start with invocation prayers. Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Namo Mahavidanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaurahatshe Namah Pancha Tattvatmakam Krishnam Bhaktarupa Swarupakam Bhaktavataram Bhaktakhyam Namami Bhaktashaktikam He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatrubhyascha Kripasindhubhyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaitya Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Narayanam Namaskrityam Naram Cheva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udhirai Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavate Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Neshtiki Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhayate Girim Yat Kripatam Aham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarine Shri Chaitanyeshwaram Paramananda Madhavam Okay, so welcome once again and thank you for being here this Saturday evening. So we were reading from Bhagavad Gita chapter 3 text 36 and 37 last time and we'll continue again from that, going a little bit more into maybe deeper understanding with some narrations from Srimad Bhagavatam. So we'll recite these two verses once again. Arjuna uvacha Atha ken prayuktoyam Papam charati purushah Anichchanapi varshaneya Baladeva niyojitah Arjuna uvacha Atha kena paryuktoyam Papam charati purushah Anichchanapi varshneya Baladeva niyojitah अथ केन परियुक्तोऽयं पापं चरति पुरुषः अनिच्छानपि वार्ष्णेय बलादेव नियोजितः. You can recite the whole verse. Anybody else would like to recite? So next text. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Kamesha Krodesha.
Kamesha Krodesha.
Rajoguna Samudbhavah.
Rajoguna Samudbhavah.
Mahashano Mahapapma.
Mahashano Mahapapma.
Viddenam
Mihaverinam.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Kamesha Krodesha. Rajoguna Samudbhavah. Mahashano Mahapapma. Vidyenam Ihiverinam. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Kamesha Krodesha. Rajoguna Samudbhavah. Mahashno Mahapapma Vidyenam Mihaverinam. Anybody?
Kamesha Krodho Kamesha Krodhesha Rajogun Samudbhava Mahashno Mahapapam Vidyenam Mihaverinam.
So the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, it is lust only, Arjuna, which is born of contact with the material modes of passion and later transformed into wrath, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of the world. So, we started the discussion, the last part of this chapter of Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3rd, Karma Yoga. And the last part of this chapter is, Arjuna opens with the question, sometime we are forced to act sinfully. So what is that which causes us to act sinfully as if by force? So what is that which causes us to act sinfully as if we are forced to act? And Lord Krishna's answer in the next subsequent verses, starting with 37, Lord Krishna described, so kamesha krodesha, it is lust only which is the greatest enemy of this world and which later transforms into wrath. And this lust is because of the contact with the material modes of passion. So this lust and anger are the greatest enemy of this world. And the word used are Mahashano Mahapapma. Mahashno. So ashno means to eat. Mahashno is this enemy such that it consumes all supply of fuel. So like in a fire, more and more fuel you put in the fire burns more and more. So lust is like that, it's a greatest devouring, it's all devouring sinful enemy. So it devours all amount of fuel. One try to enjoy more and more and more. So this desire to enjoy becomes more and more stronger. And Mahapapma, it causes one to act sinfully. Ihavarinam. So this is the greatest enemy. So we discuss this lust. What is the meaning of lust? In the last session we discussed what is the meaning of lust. It is not, as an English word, lust does sometimes may specify that lust means as a attraction between man and woman, right? As a boy and girl, as a sexual desire. So lust does not mean only that particular aspect. Lust means the desire for any sort of enjoyment, any material desires. So the Sanskrit word is kama, and kama means desires. So prema and kama. So prema is love of God, kama is desire for enjoyment, sense gratification. So it could be the desire for material enjoyment, it could be the desire for name and fame, It could be the desire of control over others. It could be the desire for physical, sexual attraction. So it covers, it includes all different aspects. So karma is the source of all misery. Karma is the source of all the problems. And karma is the greatest enemy. Under the influence of karma, somebody has a desire to enjoy, somebody has a desire for name and fame, desire for control over others. That leads to all other problems. Any example you remember from the last time?
Calling the kids, like that's one, the first one.
So, Krishna says this desire to enjoy. So, karma later transforms into krodha. Kamesha, krodesha. So, when the desire is not fulfilled, what is the immediate reaction? Krodha. Right? It turns into anger. If somebody is obstacle in the path of our enjoyment, we immediately become angry with that person. If somebody does not meet our expectation, we immediately become angry. No matter what field we say, it's politics, sports, education, even spiritual aspect of life. Everywhere we see when somebody's desire to enjoy are frustrated, it immediately leads to anger. And if the desires are fulfilled, what happens then? Happy.
Get more.
So if the desires are fulfilled, it turns into greed. And if the desires are frustrated, it transforms into anger. So both ways it keep going on. That's why the desires in first place, the karma itself is the cause of all the problem, all the suffering. Now, if we look from the particular aspect of this sex desire, desire for enjoy as a physical relation between man and woman. So in current scenario actually, there is so many problems because of that particular aspect. A boy may fall in love with a girl, and if the girl does not accept that boy or does not accept the proposal, the boy immediately becomes angry. And there are so many cases of like spoiling the life of that girl. Either physically spoiling, throwing acid on the face, right? So many cases these days. If there is a boy loves a girl and that girl loves some other boy, kind of a love triangle, and then the other person who is rejected, he thinks, I will kill other people also, other person also. Meri nahi hui to kisi ki bhi nahi hogi. Right? So that kind of mentality goes on. What is that? Karma transforms into krodha. And then social media is propounding so much that you enjoy this, you enjoy that. You come here, you enjoy this. And then your life will be happy. You will be happy. And all this bombarding is happening for enjoyment. That leads to greed in people's heart. That provocation comes. All the desires enter into the heart by seeing all this various sort of publicity. Somebody may be sitting very nicely at home, but then in the TV some advertisement come. This new car model, or this new restaurant opened here, or this new store opened here, 50% sale. So immediately what happens? Desires enter into the heart. And because of that provocation, by all this different publicity, different propaganda, we think, oh, I should enjoy. And we discuss some other aspects also. So sometimes desires enter from outside. And what is the other reason of desires evoking up? Or waking up of the desires?
Mind keeps mind keeps memory of the past events.
Yes. So mind has, mind is a storehouse, right? Mind is a storehouse of all various thoughts, various activities, various whatever we have done in the past. So mind keep bringing up those past memories. See, you went there, you enjoyed like that. So try to do that again. You will be happy. You used to go to this particular restaurant or this particular pub or this particular casino or this particular place, this particular garden. So mind is bringing up those ideas for enjoyment, and we think, oh, I need to do that, otherwise I don't have any enjoyment. So all these various sort of things are going on. And Krishna described, because of this desires, our consciousness becomes covered up. How the consciousness is covered up? Because the consciousness is so much absorbed in this enjoyment mentality. So this consciousness keeps getting degraded and degraded and degraded. And Krishna gives three examples. And the first example is as, so the one's intelligence is covered. Because of all this enjoyment tendency, one's intelligence is covered up. And the example is given as the fire is covered by smoke, as the mirror is covered by dust, and as the embryo is covered by the womb. And these are the three examples Lord Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita, which describes how the different level of covering of consciousness, basically, different level of covering of the intelligence. So there are different species of life. There are human species of life, then there is animal and bird species of life, then there is plant, tree, that species of life, right? So the example of fire covered by smoke, what is that? That describes, it relates to the human species. So in human species, intelligence is covered, but it's a thin layer of covering. One's consciousness is still there, one has the tendency to inquire, one has the capacity to inquire. Athato Brahma Jigyasa. Right? The human form of life starts with Athato Brahma Jigyasa. To inquire. And inquire about what? To inquire about the Brahman. Who am I? Who is the Supreme Lord? What is my relationship with that? That sort of inquiry. Not about inquiries about where is my food, where is my mate, where is my bed. Not all those sort of inquiries. So, Athato Brahma Jigyasa. So, only human form of life gives the opportunity to inquire. And our intelligence is covered, but it's a thin layer of covering. And the next layer of covering, which describes the mirror covered by dust. So, it can be another layer. So, once the mirror is completely covered by dust, you cannot even see through that mirror, right? You cannot see in the mirror there. Fire covered by smoke, you can still see in the background. There is fire. But once the mirror is covered by dust, you cannot see in the mirror what's there until you clean the mirror. So it's a little thicker layer of covering. And it relates to the animals, the bird species of life. Once the consciousness is covered, has a deeper covering because of so prolonged sense enjoyment, one falls into this sort of species of life as a animal, birds, where the consciousness is more covered. Dog is not thinking of Adato Brahma Jigyasa. Dog is barking and thinking, where is my food, where is my mate? That's what all he can do. If you tell dog, come to satsang program, he doesn't have that capacity to understand. And then the third example, the embryo covered with the womb. It's an even bigger, thicker layer of covering. Through the womb, you cannot see what's inside, right? So that thicker layer of covering relates to the animal species, the plants, the tree species of life. It's a much more thicker covering of consciousness. And the tree is just standing still. It's standing naked there, doesn't have any feeling or can express anything. So, because of the prolonged sense enjoyment, the consciousness becomes covered. So, all these tendencies of sense enjoyment and how it leads to frustration, Bhagavatam describes so many pastimes, giving the indication that one should not try to enjoy, thinking that, oh, let me first try to enjoy as much as I can, and then I will take to spiritual life. Because that is generally a bigger misconception, isn't it? There are basically two misconceptions. Should I describe? What are the two misconceptions? First misconception, spiritual life means renouncing everything. And most of people think spiritual life means I have to renounce everything. I have to give up all sort of material activities or all sort of enjoyment. Is that true? Not true? Why?
Because if we want do the karmas, then it means that we are doing nothing, that nothing actually.
Okay. So, if we renounce everything, basically no action, right? But does spiritual life means no enjoyment? Or giving up everything?
We are supposed to do, you know, our karmas, you know, in family life, that's our karma too. We have to do our duties too.
Okay. But that question still remains. Does spiritual life means no enjoyment? See, in family life, if one somebody starts practicing spirituality, does it means no enjoyment, giving up everything, all sort of enjoyment?
No.
Yeah. Why?
As long as you think like it's a thing given by Krishna, right? Like if you think that like God has given you this rather than like I have achieved this, then I think you can still enjoy. The thing is like if you think as if you own the enjoyment, that's the thing that's different between like being spiritual and not being spiritual.
Okay. Amalan Prabhu. Smiling. Something in mind.
No. Spiritual life means what you define by spiritual life depend on that. What do you mean by spiritual life, first of all?
So you tell me.
So now, if you're talking about enjoyment is very... How you define enjoyment? That depends on that. Like material enjoyment, if you're talking about like what generally people do, there is no enjoyment. The enjoyment is not possible, actually. People think this enjoyment.
Yeah, so we discussed that point last time.
It's
even though somebody is trying to enjoy,
it's not possible.
It's not possible because our senses are limited or the resources are limited, right? Even if somebody try to enjoy, ultimately there is no enjoyment.
No enjoyment.
But I'm talking about gratifying the senses. So when somebody takes to spiritual life, is there any sense gratification there or not? See, most of the time people think spiritual life means giving up everything, renouncing everything and no sense enjoyment.
That is actually correct.
How is that correct?
It is correct because giving up everything is the renunciation, basically.
Okay.
But giving up everything doesn't mean you don't do your duties.
Yes.
You do your all practical duties, whatever you are around, like your family duties you do, you go to office, everything you do.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a difference.
Yes.
Difference is, in a mind level, you are renounced. You are living a life like a lotus. Then it is called renunciation. Then it is only enjoyment.
Mm.
Then only enjoyment is possible. Otherwise, enjoyment is a mode.
It will
be always like that.
So, taking to spiritual life actually does not mean there is no sense gratification. Because after taking to spiritual life also you are eating. Will you stop eating? No, right? So, we need to maintain. So, you are still eating. So, basically the tongue is still getting its enjoyment. You are still sleeping. Right? So, body is getting all its what it needs. So, all the senses are still getting its food. It doesn't mean that taking to spiritual life, one is giving up all the activities. One will not eat, one will not sleep. So the senses are getting their food. So that is the biggest misconception people have. Spiritual life means, oh, I have given up everything. What have you given up? Have you given up eating? Have you given up sleeping? Have you given up moving from one place to another place? So it's only the shift of consciousness. Rather than thinking, I am the doer, you think Krishna is the doer, I am an instrument. So it's a switch of consciousness. And then the second misconception. Family life means full license of enjoyment. Full freedom. That is the second misconception. Oh, right now I am a grihastha, I am in a family life, means I can do whatever I like, whatever I want. So that is another biggest misconception. That family life is full free license to do whatever we like. No, that is a misconception, because family life, grihastha, is also a progressive stage in spiritual advancement. Grihastha is a big responsibility, and grihastha life means following the rules and regulations to move towards spiritual life, make progress in spiritual life. So both these are a big misconception which people generally have. And this is what Krishna is speaking from this particular topic in Bhagavad Gita here. The biggest enemy is the desire of enjoyment. And let's discuss few narrations from Srimad Bhagavatam. So the first pastime I want to discuss from Bhagavatam is the story of King Yajati. So how many of you know about the story of King Yajati? It comes in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9. Okay, how many of you know Shukracharya? Daitya Guru Shukracharya, right? So Daitya Guru Shukracharya, he had a daughter named Devyani. And the Daitya King that time, he had a daughter named Sharmishtha. And there is another king named Yayati. So this story revolves around these three personalities. Remember the names. Okay, Devyani, Sharmishtha and Yayati. So once Sharmishtha was roaming around in the garden, around the palace with all her friends. And Devyani also was her friend, the Shukracharya, the Guru Shukracharya's daughter. So they were all roaming around in the garden and they came upon a lake. And they all thought, let's have some water sports in this lake. So they all took their dupattas and all and they kept it on the side. They went inside the water. They started sporting in the water, starting enjoying, splashing the water on each other. So they were having fun. And at that time, Lord Shiva, along with his wife Parvati, passed from that place riding his Nandi bull. And Sharmishtha thought it's very inappropriate to be in this condition in front of Lord Shiva when he's passing from here. So Sharmishtha came out of the water and trying to dress up properly. So while they were actually sporting in the water, a wind gust came and the clothes all get mixed up. Went from one place to here, so all kind of flew away. And so Sharmishtha came out of the water, the king's daughter, and she trying to quickly get up, get her clothes and dress up her properly. So by mistake she took the cloth of Devyani and she put on her. And as Devyani came out of the water, she saw Sharmishtha putting on her clothes and she became really angry. Really, really angry. And she started chastising Sharmishtha like anything. And her words were, as a dog snatches away the clarifying butter which is kept for performing the yajna. So you have snatched away my cloth and trying to put on my clothes on your body. So indirectly what she is trying to say is that as a brahmana we have a high class. And kshatriya is the protecting the brahmana class. So kshatriya is like a dog. So as a dog is there to protect, but if the dog itself steal and try to run away, like that you are trying to steal my cloth and run away with my cloth. So indirectly she is hurling big insult on Sharmishtha. And Sharmishtha became angry. Now it's her turn to get angry and she is hurling bad words on Devyani. She said, your father is my father's servant. You live subsist on the donations given by my father. See, brahmanas generally, they live based on what is given by the king, by the kshatriya class. So that's how the brahmana carry on their life, carry on their responsibility. So she is saying, your father is like a beggar and he lives on by the alms given by my father. And so she started counter-attacking Devyani. So both, and this is actually the indication from Bhagavatam, the nature of girls, right? How they quickly get into fight, start hurling the bad words on each other. In the city also, in the villages also, this is common scenes, right? Somebody threw something in front of other person's house, the door, immediately the fight starts. You did this first and you did that first. And so this whole fight starts. So Devyani and Sharmishtha are fighting. And then Sharmishtha got angry. She hold on to Devyani and dragged her, throw her in a well. So what is going on here? If we try to relate to this verse, is what is going on?
Anger.
Lust with
anger. Anger. Because of what?
Desire.
Kama. So here everybody, both parties, has desire for fame, for position. She is thinking, I am better position, I am a Brahmana. She is thinking, I am Kshatriya, I am the daughter of the king, I am better class, better position. So others should be respecting me. So this desire. So desire, kama could be anything. It could be desire to enjoy something, desire for position, for name, fame, for controlling others. So because of this desire for their respective positions, and then immediately the krodha comes. If somebody think, oh, my position is being compromised, immediately the anger arose. And she threw her in the well and she went back to her palace. And as Devyani is sitting in the well, King Yajati happened to pass from that place. So he was a king from another kingdom and he was hunting in the forest. And while hunting, he got thirsty and looking for water, he came to that well. And as he looked inside the well, he saw a girl sitting in the well. And he gave his top cloth to her to cover properly. And then he gave her his hand to her to catch onto the hand and kind of pulled her out. And as Devyani came out, she was very thankful to King Yajati. And she spoke in a very pleasing words or very respectful words that, you have hold on to my hand. And I will like to accept you as my husband. So please accept me as your wife. And King Yajati was little apprehensive of that. He thought, see, at that time, if you consider from the Vedic culture point of view, the king could, the Brahmana could marry the daughter of the king. So Brahmana could marry the daughter of a Kshatriya, but Kshatriya marrying the daughter of a Brahmana was not well accepted. So marrying one lower class from the girl side was not well accepted. So King Yajati was a little apprehensive that what if others will accept it or not. So he said, I cannot accept that proposal without your father's permission. So Devyani took King Yajati to his father. Who is that? Guru Shukracharya. Shukracharya is also very well known for his short temper. Right? So Sharmishtha went to Shukracharya. Devyani went to Shukracharya to her father. Sharmishtha went to his father, the Daitya king. So Devyani narrated the whole incidents to king, what had happened, that by mistake I put on her cloth and she got angry and she started blaspheming, chastising me, and with anger I threw her in the well and I came back. And king was very upset, thinking of the anger of Shukracharya, that if Shukracharya became angry and if he curses the whole family, what will happen to us? So he was a little afraid and he wanted to go back to Shukracharya and beg forgiveness. And on the other side, when Sharmishtha, Devyani went to Shukracharya, she narrated everything to him, describing what has happened, not telling what she has done first. She told, Sharmishtha threw me in the well. See, she is the daughter of a king and I don't know what she thinks about herself. So this is how the kids will complain to their parents, right? They will not tell their mistake. They will tell what other person did to us. And then parents will come and start fighting with each other. Right? It's the problem between the kids, and kid after some time will be normal. But parents get into fight. So here Shukracharya became very angry. How dare she does this to my daughter? What she thinks of herself. And by the way, this King Yajati, she tells her about King Yajati, that this is a hero who came and escaped me. and I would like to marry her. We want your permission. And Shukracharya accepted the proposal. And Shukracharya took Devyani and thought, let's go to king and I want to settle this account with the king. So he started going to the palace and king is coming to meet Shukracharya. They met on the way. And as soon as the king saw Shukracharya coming to rescue from his anger, kind of to pacify Shukracharya, he immediately fell flat on the ground to pay respects to Shukracharya and accepted that my daughter has done something very wrong and she should not have done this. I am very sorry about this. So this is the art of pleasing somebody. If somebody is angry on us for some reason, rather than getting into a verbal fight, what is the better way to pacify the other person? Accepting the mistake and speaking soft, sweet words. That's how the other person's anger can be pacified. Otherwise, here the anger is getting onto a higher level. There also anger is getting onto a higher level. And both will getting into verbal abuse and physical abuse. Isn't it?
Yeah.
So king fell flat, asked for forgiveness. And Shukracharya was pleased with king's behavior. But he could not ignore his daughter. He had so much attachment for the daughter that I cannot just let go of her insult. So king said, please ask me whatever you like. I will fulfill your desire. And Shukracharya said, I don't want anything. Ask my daughter whatever she wants. Fulfill her desire and I will forgive you. So the king asked Devyani, please tell me what you want. And you know what Devyani asked? A devastating thing for the king and for king's daughter as a princess. So she said, when I marry, I want Sharmishta to come with me as my maidservant. So see the level of desire and the level of this tit-for-tat kind of attitude. She has done a little bit something to me, I will spoil all her life. She said, I want her to come with me as my maidservant. Now, king is looking at Sharmishta. And Sharmishta, knowing her father's position and trying to save her father from the wrath of Shukracharya, from the curse of Shukracharya, she politely accepts the proposal. So she becomes ready to go as a maidservant. Rajkumari, dasi ban ke jane ko tayyar hai. And this is all happening because of kama and krodha. The desires for the position and the anger. Now the other aspect of the story which I want to stress upon here. So the king Iljati married Devyani. Okay? And took her with him into his palace. And Sharmishta along with all her friends go as the maid servant. And Shukracharya warned Iljati, you are marrying my daughter. I know even the king's daughter is coming to your house. Make sure you don't get into any relationship with her. Because earlier the system was when the king marries the princess, so the princess goes to her husband's house and all the servants, maid servants, dasis also go. And sometime the king may accept any dasi, any maid servant also, and they may have children through the maid servant also. We know the classic example of Vidura. Vidura was dasi putra. So Shukracharya warned very strongly, make sure you don't have any relationship with this girl, Sharmishta. So Yayati went home, and Yayati had a strong desires for enjoyment. Strong desire for enjoyment with woman. So he is enjoying with Devyani as husband wife, and after some time he had children through Devyani. And Sharmishta, seeing that her friend, who used to be her friend as a right Devyani, said she is having children, she also has the desire to have children. And she approached King Ajati, I will also like to have children. And so if a girl approaches the king's duty is to give shelter. And King Yajati, knowing the position of Sharmishta, knowing she was the princess, she is the daughter of a king, she accepted the proposal and have a relationship with her also. And Sharmishta also got three children. So Devyani had two kids, Sharmishta got three kids. And later on Devyani came to know that my husband is having a secretly relationship with Sharmishta. She was furious and she went back to her father's house. I am leaving this house immediately and going to my father's house. So she went to Shukracharya and explained what King Yajati has done. He is having a relationship with Sharmishta and he got three children through Sharmishta. And King Yajati, knowing the anger of Devyani and so much kama in his heart, as lusty desires in his heart, ran behind Devyani, came to Shukracharya's house. And Shukracharya, seeing Yajati, got angry immediately. "You rascal, what did I tell you? Don't have any relationship with that girl, the king's daughter. And you did not listen to my words. I curse you, you immediately lose your youth and you become an old person. So you will lose all your youth, you will lose all your potency, you will lose all your capabilities and become an old person." And King Yajati immediately transformed into a very old person and he fell at Shukracharya's feet. "Please forgive me whatever I has done. See, if I become old, even I still have not pacified my desire to enjoy with your daughter. And your daughter will also be suffering ultimately because she will not have any enjoyment." And then Shukracharya thought, whatever curse as I have given, indirectly my daughter will also suffer. So her lusty desires are also not fulfilled and she will be suffering. So he said, "I cannot take the curse completely back and I can give some adjustment. So if you approach any young person and switch your old age with the youth of that person, then you will become again youth and that person will take your old age." So now King Yajati had five children, two through Devyani, three through Sharmishta. He approached his first son, the eldest son, through Devyani. His name was Yadu. So he came to Yadu, "Please switch your youth with my old age. You take my old age and give me your youth so that I can fulfill my desire to enjoy. I have not yet satisfied my desires. I want to enjoy, so please can you switch your youth?" And he rejected the proposal. "See, you have enjoyed whatever you had in your karma. Now it's our turn to enjoy. I cannot switch my youth with you." So he went to the second, the third, the fourth. So all the first four kids rejected the proposal. Then he went to the last, the youngest child, through Sharmishta, the youngest child. His name is Puru. So he went to Puru and gave the same proposal. "Please take my old age and give me your youth." And the last son, he accepted the proposal saying, "To fulfill my father's desire is my prime duty. If I cannot fulfill the order of my father, what is the use of my life?" A child who is not obedient to his father, he is like the stool of his father. So that is the description from Bhagavatam. So in general, the principle is the child should be obedient to the father, carrying on the orders of the parents. If the child is not obedient to the parent, his life is waste. He is like a stool of the father. And Prabhupada gives a very nice example in the purport for this verse in Bhagavatam. Prabhupada writes, one poet said, "Putra or Mutra." So there are two words, right? Putra or Mutra. So Putra and Mutra come from the same part of the male. By engaging in the sexual activity, the son is born. And through the same body, the person relieves all the discharge from the body. So Putra and Mutra. And if the Putra, if the son is not obedient to the father, if the son is not the devotee of the Lord, he is no better than Mutra, like the urine of the father. So same example is given in Bhagavatam, like a child who is not obedient to the father, he is just like his life is waste. He is just like the stool of the father. So Puru accepted the proposal and exchanged his youth with the old age. Now what is the focus here in the story? The tendencies to enjoy, right? The karma, the desires. Yajati is thinking, I have my desires not satisfied. I want to satisfy my desires. And he is ready to take the youth of his son and give his old age to the son. And after he got his youth back, his son took the old age and he just renounced all the activities, engaged in spiritual activities. Here, Yajati, after getting youth, he kept enjoying. He was enjoying thoroughly all sort of material opulence, the sexual relationship and everything, all sort of material enjoyment he was enjoying. And Bhagavatam described, he kept on enjoying all the material activities, sense gratification for thousand years. Let me read that verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. Although Maharaj Yajati was the king of the entire world and he engaged his mind and senses in enjoying material possessions for 1,000 years, he was unable to be satisfied. So no matter how much one try to enjoy, one may think, oh, let me enjoy thoroughly and once I am done, then I will give it up. The material desires, the enjoyment propensity never satisfy. He kept enjoying for 1,000 years and he was not able to get complete satisfaction. And ultimately he got this lamentation is in his heart. See, I took the youth of my son and I kind of spoiled his life also just with the desire to enjoy. And then he went back to his son, please take your youth back and give my old age back to me. I have learned my lesson. I don't want to engage in this enjoyment propensity any longer. So he gave the youth back to Puru and took his old age back. And then he completely gave up all these things and renounced completely and went into forest to practice spiritual life. Now if somebody hears this story, one can come to two different conclusions. One may think, yes, one should try to enjoy thoroughly and then one will get the renunciation in the heart, then one will be able to practice spiritual life. But the real purpose of this narration is, one should understand, no matter how much one try to enjoy, one can never be satisfied. This satisfaction can never be achieved. And actually there is no such thing as enjoyment in this material world. Whatever we try to enjoy, the desire to enjoy is like a fire. And more ghee you pour in the fire, it burns even more and more. Isn't it? If one is trying to pour ghee in the fire, is there any chance of it stopping? It's getting pacified, it's getting extinguished? No, so the desire will keep burning more and more. And here it is described he enjoyed for 1,000 years, because in Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, the life duration is much longer. If somebody thinks here, let me enjoy thoroughly for 100 years, can one be satisfied? First of all, the life duration is too short. One doesn't have that propensity, that much time period to enjoy, to get that experience of his first-hand experience. That's why these narrations are given, to learn from others' experience, not get entangled in this tendency of enjoyment. Learn from what is described in the scriptures. There is another very good example of Sobri Muni. Heard the name Sobri Muni? You know the story? So again, this another story is described in Canto 9, same canto of Bhagavatam. Earlier than this story, there is a story of Sobri Muni. So So this Sabri Muni, he was a great renounced person as a sannyasi or a sage, and he was doing severe austerities. He was living under the water and practicing austerities under the water. And he has done austerities for so long, his body got wrinkled because of staying prolonged under the water. He had, his skin was kind of losing and he had wrinkles all around his face. He was looking very old. And as he was practicing these austerities, even under the water, one day he saw a she-fish and he-fish mating in the water in front of him. And seeing them engaged in this sexual activity, he got that desire to enjoy like that. So he came out of the water, giving up the austerities as this desire entered in the heart. So we said desires enter two ways, right? By seeing from outside something, all this social media, everything, whatever is propounded, by seeing that, the desires enter. Or we have done something in the past and mind is a storehouse and desires keep coming out. Mind is keep bringing those things as a flashback, memories in front of our eyes. So seeing something externally, this strong desire came to him. And giving up his austerities, he came out and he went to the king, King Mandata at that time. So King Mandata, he is as the ancestors of Lord Ramachandra in that family lineage. So King Mandata, he had 50 daughters. So this sage, Sabri Muni, he went to the assembly of the king and gave the proposal, I would like to marry one of your daughter. Please give me one of your daughter in marriage. And king, seeing the condition of Sabri Muni, that he is such an old person, and but being respectful to him, he did not directly deny his request. He said, I have given the complete decision making to my daughters. Whatever they want to accept, wherever they want to marry, whatever, whomever they want to choose, it's up to them. And I don't want to take away their freedom. So if my daughters accept you, I have no problem. And Sabri Muni, understanding kid's diplomatic answer, that what's in his heart, and seeing his condition, that I'm such an old person, completely wrinkled up, my skin is kind of loose and all that, no girl will like me, no girl will accept me. And but he had mystic powers. He was a great yogi for so long of austerities. He had mystic powers. So he went out and with his mystic power, he transformed himself into a very young prince-like person. Very young-looking person. Very attractive. And as he approached the palaces of these daughters, all the maidservants respectfully took him inside. And all the daughters of the king Mandata, they saw this charming prince-like person. Very attractive, very beautiful, very handsome. And they were all attracted to him. Now he was looking to marry one daughter. Now all these daughters were ready to marry. So Sabri Muni ultimately married all the 50 daughters of King Mandata. And with his mystic power, he created nice palaces. And started enjoying with those 50 wives. So he gave up all his spiritual practice, he gave up all his austerities, and he started completely engaged in enjoyment with the 50 wives. So he kept enjoying like that for thousands of years. And one day as he was sitting, he had this lamentation in his heart. Alas, what has I done? I was a great yogi, I was a great renounced person. But because of this one scene, seeing this fish mating, I got this desire to enjoy. Alas, I have given up all my religious spiritual practice and completely engaged in this sense enjoyment and destroyed all the merits of my austerities. What great loss! And his conclusion was, I was a great renounced person, but I was living alone. And that was a big danger. Even though somebody may be a very renounced person, but having no association, no positive association, no like-minded association can pose a big danger. Because the distraction can come at any time, and if somebody is not plugged in the positive association, that distraction can drag the person down completely. So that's why association is very important to stay on the path in spiritual life. Once one devotee in Mayapur, he approached Prabhupada. Prabhupada, living with devotees is too troublesome, too many conflicts. This understanding that living with other person is also a problem, right? If we don't have this humility in the heart, and we can get into trouble with other people, because everybody has their opinions, their thought process, and if we don't go along with people, it's very difficult to live with people. So sometimes it becomes difficult to live with devotees, and it's hard to give the association also. One should be very careful not to go away from association. So this devotee came to Prabhupada. Prabhupada, I have too much problem with the devotees. I would like to just build a hut for myself, stay in the hut and do my bhajan. I don't want to associate with anybody. And Prabhupada said, no, don't go. Stay in the association of devotees. But he did not listen. He just went, he made a hut for himself and started living. And for a few days he was practicing. After some days he was gone. And few months later, he was never to be seen again. He was completely fell victim of Maya because of losing the association. Because Maya is very powerful. She is waiting for any loose movement. That's why devotee association is very, very, very important to make progress in spiritual life. So Sobri Muni is lamenting that because of my one mistake, I gave up my spiritual practice, all my austerities, and fell victim of the sense enjoyment. And no matter how somebody try to enjoy, there is no satisfaction. This fire burns more and more and more. So he is also giving same conclusion that people should learn from this passage, from this pastime, from this experience, and be careful. So like that, there are so many passages from Bhagavatam. There is another story of Daksha Prajapati. So Daksha Prajapati, everybody knows Daksha Prajapati, right? So he is one of the, what do you call, Digpal. So there are 14 Prajapatis. So he is one of the Prajapatis. So Daksha Prajapati, he had 10,000 sons. Brahma gave him the order to increase progeny, increase population in the world, right, in the beginning of creation. So Daksha Prajapati, he had 10,000 sons through his wife. And all his 10,000 sons, he wanted to engage them to generate further population. But before that, he wanted them to get purified, to engage in some austerity, become purified, then come back, engage in grihastha life and increase population. So all these 10,000 sons went in the forest to one part of the. So at one sacred river, they were performing austerities, and Narad Muni happened to pass from there. Narad Muni saw these children of Daksha Prajapati doing very nice austerities. So he went to them. And Narad Muni gave them instructions in the practice of spiritual life. And he is such a powerful preacher. He can change the heart of anybody. So Narad Muni has disciples as great devotees such as Dhruva Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, all the children of Daksha Prajapati. He has a disciple such as a degraded person, as a hunter, as a robber. So he has all sort of people, and he can change the heart of everybody. Such a powerful preacher. So he went to the children of Daksha Prajapati and gave them nice understanding, nice teachings in Bhagavad Dharma. And they all went away, just giving up everything. They thought, oh, we'll just take up to this renounced life. We don't want to go back and engage in this grihastha life. As Daksha Prajapati came to know that all my 10,000 children are gone, nobody is willing to come back, he was very upset. And he was a little angry with Narada also. But to carry on with the order of Brahma, he again had another 1,000 son. Again he sent those 1,000 son to perform austerity before engaging in the grihastha life. And as this 1,000 sons went, they were performing austerities. Narad Muni again came there. Narad Muni bajaye veena Radhika Raman name. So Narad Muni playing on his veena, he again appeared on the scene. All these 1,000 sons of Daksha Prajapati doing austerities. He saw another batch of devotees to preach. So he went again and he preached to them, "See, as a young brothers, your duty is to follow in the footsteps of your elder brothers. Your elder brothers, they also came here, they performed nice austerities and they went to completely take up to the renounced life. You should follow into the footsteps of your elder brothers." And listening to Narada Muni's word, being convinced by his preaching, they also left. They also gave up completely, that we don't want to go back and take up completely renounced life. And Narad Muni came to Daksha Prajapati, gave him the news, "Your sons, gone, they are not coming back." And Daksha Prajapati was very angry, very upset with Narada. Said, "You fool, you appear to be a renounced person, but you are in the garb of this renounced person, you are a hypocrite. You don't know what is the right thing to do. You are making these young people into renounced people before they have enjoyed thoroughly in this material world. See, I know material enjoyment ultimately leads to suffering. Material enjoyment brings suffering. But one need to thoroughly enjoy first, personally experience this suffering. Then he will have the experience and then he can take to the renounced life. You don't know the right process." So Daksha Prajapati is giving this philosophy. So Daksha Prajapati is saying, "I know material enjoyment brings suffering." So he is saying himself also, that is right. So material enjoyment, no matter how much one try to enjoy, it brings suffering. But his philosophy was, first one need to personally thoroughly experience that suffering by trying to enjoy. And once this suffering one has experienced, then one should give up and go renounce everything. So, but is that a right statement? That once one has completely enjoyed thoroughly, one has completely given up all the desires, then one should take up to the spiritual life. That was Daksha Prajapati's argument. Is that right argument? Is that right argument? One should try to thoroughly enjoy, get that experience and then renounce. But we discussed in the beginning, no matter how much you try to enjoy, there is no enjoyment. So, what is the problem here? What Daksha Prajapati is saying, after completely one has enjoyed, he has satisfied himself, then he is eligible to give up and take renounced order of life. We already discussed two stories. No matter how much one try to enjoyment, there is no satisfaction. These desires can never be satisfied. Right? The story of Yajati, story of Sabri Muni. So they concluded, we have tried to enjoy thoroughly for thousands of years, still our desires are not satisfied. Why? Because as one may becoming older, it doesn't mean the desires have gone away. It's only that one's capacity to enjoy has been taken away. The desires are still there. An old person looking at Gulab Jamun Rasgulla, he may still have the desire to enjoy, but he is thinking diabetes level is too high, blood pressure level is too high, cholesterol level is too high. Even though he has the desire to enjoy, he does not have the facility to enjoy anymore. That is the only thing. The desire still remain. The person still have the desire to enjoy with girls. The person may still have the desire to eat all sort of food. But the capacity has been taken away. He does not have the capacity to do that anymore. That is the only difference. So the desires can never be satisfied. So that is the felony in Daksha Prajapati's statement. And Prabhupada writes in the purport actually,
Daksha Prajapati is such a higher level of person. How can he say like that?
Yeah, because Daksha Prajapati, he is completely under the mode of passion, right? He is in the enjoyment tendency himself also. The name Daksha, Daksha itself means who is very expert. Daksha. Wo ye kaam karne mein daksha hai. Right? That is the meaning of Daksha, means expert. He is the expert in enjoying the opulences. And Prabhupada writes in the purport. See, my position. So Daksha Prajapati was so angry with Narad Muni, he cursed Narad Muni. That I curse you, that you will not be able to stay at a place for longer. That you are trying to teach all these young people that give up your life and go to forest and renounce everything. So I curse you, you will not be able to stay longer at one place. Even though Narad Muni, he is such an elevated devotee, such an elevated soul, he accepted that curse. He said, it's good for me.
Anyway,
I will meet more people, make more devotees. I will travel more now. So Prabhupada writes in the purport that my position is also like Narad Muni. I am going all over and making these young people are getting attracted. Young people are taking to the spiritual life. And the parents of these young people are becoming angry with me. See, you are making all these people into devotees and they are giving up their family lives and becoming completely surrendering their lives. So I am facing the same kind of agitation from their parents. My position is like Narad Muni. So overall conclusion from all three passages which we have discussed, the material desires are never satisfied, and these material desires lead the person to do all sort of abominable activities. And the desires, the kama transforms into krodha. So another passage of Daksha Prajapati related to anger. So Daksha Prajapati has such a desire for high prestige, position. My position is so greater. And in once in assembly, all these Devi Devatas are sitting. As Daksha Prajapati, because he is made as a Prajapati, the Dikpala, the leader of everybody. As he entered in the assembly, everybody got up and paid respect to Daksha Prajapati. And Lord Shiva was also in the assembly. And Lord Shiva was in meditation that time. He did not
get up
and he did not basically acknowledge Daksha Prajapati. He did not get up from his seat or offer any obeisances. And Daksha Prajapati was seeing others standing and paying obeisances, paying respect. And he was very happy. He saw Shiva sitting. And immediately in his heart, he became so angry. Who is this guy? He is not acknowledging my position. First of all, he is my son-in-law. So his position is inferior to mine. I am a father-in-law. He should be offering respect to me. He is not getting up and completely ignoring me. So he got so angry and he started speaking bad words towards Lord Shiva. This person, he is smashing the ashes, smearing the ashes on his body. I gave my such a beautiful daughter to him. He does not deserve her. This Brahma told me to give my daughter to this guy who does not know even the principles of religion. So he started speaking such a bad words about Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva was completely at peace, completely silent, not speaking anything as a counter argument or counter harsh words. So this example is towards anger. When somebody has his position compromised, his desires frustrated, immediately leads to anger. And a devotee, as a general principle, one need to take up the blasphemy of others. If somebody is trying to blaspheme ourselves, we should stay calm, as Lord Shiva is showing by his example. Lord Shiva is being blasphemed here, but as a great devotee of the Lord, he is completely silent, completely peaceful. He is not counter-attacking. And at the same time, if somebody else is being blasphemed, if other devotees are being blasphemed, if the Lord is being blasphemed, being criticized, at that time the devotee's responsibility is to act like fire. So when somebody is blaspheming us, we should stay like ice, cold, no offense taken. But if somebody is blaspheming others, we should act like fire.
But we should have our own
attitude. Yes. So it's again big topic. We'll not go into that right now. I'm just giving the example related to this topic. So Lord Ramchandra also teaches very great point about controlling the anger. Or how to express the anger. Last time I mentioned, there are two separate things. Somebody remembers? What statement I said?
It's a hona and gussa karna.
So gussa hona, gussa karna. To become angry or to exhibit anger. So these are two different things. And how are it's two different things? Gussa hona or gussa karna. Kya difference hai? Gussa karna means to show anger externally, but you are not affected by anger internally. Gussa karna. So sometimes as a parent or as in some superior position to correct the subordinates, we have to correct them. We have to sometimes show anger. Right? So to exhibit anger, gussa karna, to correct somebody. And gussa hona is by seeing somebody's fault or seeing somebody criticizing us, seeing somebody not obeying our orders, if we get affected by that anger, if anger overtakes our emotions, that is gussa hona, to become angry. That somebody starts burning with fire, right? He loses full control on all his emotions, all in his senses. So that is gussa hona. And one should try to give up this tendency of becoming angry. But at certain points, we may have to show anger to correct others. So that the others are not taking us just granted for granted. Taking us lightly and getting into wrong track basically. Right? Getting into problem further. So we have to sometimes correct others. And for that, we may have to show anger. Prabhupada also said, if you have to correct the child, it doesn't mean you physically slap the child or physically hurt the child, but sometimes you may have to raise the finger or show the stick, right? So that is exhibiting anger. So Lord Ram, in this particular pastime, when Lord Ram killed Bali, gave the kingdom to Sugriv, and Lord Ram told him that you enjoy in your kingdom, right now it's a rainy season, so this 4 months we will put aside everything, we don't want to start searching for Sita immediately, it's a rainy season, it's hard to travel during this time. So once this rainy season is done, then we'll start this search for finding Sita. So Sugriva, he went to his palace and he was engaged in all sort of enjoyment. And he was so engrossed in this enjoyment, he even forgot the time. He forgot everything. He forgot his promise that I need to help Lord Ram, who had helped me get my kingdom back. And Lord Ram, he is waiting for Sugriva to come back to him and offer his help. So Lord Ram, at that time, he exhibited his anger. His word was, the arrow with which I killed Bali, I still have that arrow. If Sugriva doesn't understand, his responsibility, tomorrow I can use that arrow and kill Sugriva also. So what Lord Ram is saying, very carefully look at the words. So he is exhibiting the anger, but he is not acting on the anger immediately. So what happens is, once we get angry, we immediately burst out the anger. Right? We act out immediately. And Lord Ram is saying, he is exhibiting anger. He is not becoming angry, he is exhibiting anger, saying, if Sugriva doesn't remember his promise, if Sugriva doesn't come back here, tomorrow I can kill him also. And Lakshmana, when he heard the statement of Lord Ram, says, finally, Lord Ram is angry at Sugriva's behavior. And Lakshman said to Lord Ram, you are angry, that's good, but what is this kind of anger? You're saying, tomorrow I will hurt Sugriva. Karna hai to abhi karo. And gussa kiya bhi to kaisa gussa kiya? Mujhse pooch lete. I am the expert in this anger matter, right? This anger is my department. गुस्सा किया भी तो कैसा किया बोल रहे कल करूंगा सो लेट मी गो एंड tells Sugriva, reminds Sugriva his position. So Lord Ram said, we just need to chastise Sugriva. You don't need to hurt Sugriva. So usko sirf uski promise yaad dilana hai. So Lord Ram is teaching by his behavior to sometime be angry at somebody to correct them, but not burst out the anger and harm that person. So like that, actually I gave just one example. There are so many examples. Hanuman, when Hanuman went to Lanka, right, to find Mother Sita. So Hanuman was insulted. All these Rakshasas, when Hanuman surrendered basically in front of Brahmastra, when they are capturing Hanuman, binding him, taking him to Ravana's assembly, all these demons come and they are kicking Hanuman, they are making fun of Hanuman, speaking bad words to Hanuman. Hanuman is completely calm. No agitation, no anger. As a devotee's quality, as long as the insult is to me, it's okay. But as he went to Ravana's assembly, so Ravana is speaking bad words about Lord Ram. That Banvasi, he has no power, his wife is stolen and he is just wandering in the forest crying and this that. When Ravana is blaspheming Lord Ram, at that time Hanuman becomes angry. And he burns out the complete Lanka. But his anger also at that time, he is in full control. How much anger to exhibit and completely knowing where to cause any damage. So he was completely under, anger was completely under his control. He was not in the control of anger. Otherwise he could have burnt everything. Just in the burst of anger go burn up everything. But he did not touch the house of Bhivishan. He was very careful about the area of Ashoka Vatika, right? Knowing Mother Sita is living there, this is the house of Bhivishan. So, being in control of anger, not being in control of anger, keeping anger under control. So, this karma leads to krodha. And how we can pacify this karma and krodha? So Krishna tells in the next verses that one need to, who is the, what are the stay places for these lust and anger? What are the hiding places of this lust and anger?
Mind.
The senses, the mind and the intelligence. These are the hiding places. So if we want to capture the enemy, we need to attack at the places where the enemy is hiding. Right? So if there is a terrorist, if the intelligence agency come to know, oh, terrorists have a plan to do bomb blast at this place. And if the intelligence agency is trying to find out where the terrorist is hiding. So find out the hiding places of the terrorist to attack on those place to get the terrorist under control. So same way this mind, this senses, intelligence and mind are the hiding places of this enemy known as lust, the karma. And to capture this, one need to control these hiding places. Like earlier Osama bin Laden. See all these different countries, he is terrorizing everybody. And whole US military and everybody is trying to find Osama bin Laden. They are finding where Osama bin Laden is hiding. So same way this biggest enemy, the biggest terrorist, in everybody's life, this karma and krodha is hiding in these places. And it's causing damage. It's ready to cause damage through these hiding places. So for example, if there is a prime minister and prime minister has his security guard, his personal group of security guards, and if the terrorists want to harm the prime minister and if they bribe the close group of security guards, then that security guards is biggest threat for the life of prime minister, right? So that security guard, the bodyguard itself becomes the biggest threat. So same way for the soul to make spiritual progress in life, the bodyguard is the intelligence, and if the intelligence is being bribed by this desires to enjoy, if the senses bribe this intelligence, that you come on our side and help us enjoy, and enjoy in that way, if the intelligence becomes corrupted, then there is no protection to make progress in spiritual life. So, to protect ourselves, one need to capture these hiding places for this enemy of lust and anger. So how we can control these things? So first Krishna says controlling the senses. How we can control the senses? By regulating the senses. So I said the misconception is grihastha life is full enjoyment. Just do, enjoy fully, do everything, whatever. Try to enjoy maximum capacity. But grihastha life is about regulation. One need to regulate one's activity. So regulating the senses, but regulating itself will not help, because the senses, if you try to control, how much you can control? Ultimately, the senses need to be engaged in positive activity. And to engage the senses in positive activity, we need the help of mind. So one need to purify the mind. So first is regulate the senses. Second is purify the mind. Right now, mind is so much corrupted. It has so many bad things in the storage. So we need to purify the mind. And the third thing is sharpen the intelligence. So regulate the senses, purify the mind, and sharpen the intelligence. And if the intelligence is sharpened, if our close bodyguard is strong enough and it's not being attacked by this allurements of the senses, then it can help us make progress in spiritual life. And to sharpen the intelligence, what is the biggest weapon to sharpen the intelligence? Chanting the holy name, reading the scriptures. The biggest one is association. The devotee association. As we discussed in the story of Sabri Muni, association is the biggest weapon which we need to stay on this path of spiritual progress. So by staying in the association of devotees, by hearing Harikatha, by reading the scriptures, our intelligence becomes sharpened. It becomes equipped to counterattack the allurements of enjoyment tendencies. So the three formula, can everybody say? Regulate the senses, purify the mind, sharpen the intelligence. Right? So by sharpening the intelligence, we purify the mind. By purifying the mind, we regulate the senses. Otherwise, one may have, the desire to drink intoxication, liquor. And the senses are tempting. Oh, aaj to peg lagane ka time hai. Drinking time. And the mind or intelligence may say, no, this is not good activity. It's wrong. You should not do. And if the senses keep attempting, provoking, ultimately the intelligence may become weaker. A person is by its own and may give up to the temptations of the senses. But if the intelligence is sharp enough, if one is staying in positive association, if the senses is, mind is saying, no, rather than watching movie or doing all this nonsense, let me go to devotee association. Right? So better I go to satsang program. So in that way, if the intelligence is sharp enough, then it can help us to protect ourselves, getting the victim of these allurements. So, with that, I guess we'll stop here. If anybody has any comment or any question related to what we discussed. Sorry, I guess I took a little longer.
Yeah, about the purification. In our kids' camp, I learned one point. Sri Krishna Prabhu explained to kids. He asked, why do we keep the tilak? So, one of the kids explained actually. So the tilak is representing us for the things we have, we know already. So the other thing what he explained is, this body is a temple, and with keeping this tilak to represent this in this inside the temple, I am the deity.
Hmm.
So that when he understands I am a deity and inside this body and body is temple, one is not going to harm the body.
Hmm.
Is not going to take any intoxication or harm the body. So this is the point we learned. In
right.
The temple.
Nice. Thank you. Okay. Okay, so thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Granthraj Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.